Hello, and welcome to the Morgan McKinley Leaders in Technology podcast, a podcast where we sit down with some of the most preeminent figures within the Irish technology space, speaking with them about their careers and getting their unique insights into the industries they're operating in. My name is Ronan McConville. I oversee technology leadership recruitment at Morgan McKinley, working as part of the tech recruitment team as a whole. As recruitment consultants, one thing we constantly have to address is, what areas are companies going to be looking to scale going forward? And what areas of technology specifically will they be looking to recruit in? To that end, the blockchain space, given how it's taken off over the past few years, is always a huge point of interest for us. My guest today, Lauren Grendon, is someone very well versed in all things blockchain. Having spent 8 years with MasterCard working across a variety of commercial projects, he now sits as Director of Blockchain Engineering, overseeing MasterCard's expansion within the space. I spoke with Lauren about where he sees the current state of the technology alongside its capacity going forward, the projects MasterCard in particular are involved with, and the kind of people he looks for within the blockchain space when he goes out to recruit. I hope you enjoy it. It's a great conversation. So I suppose from a layman's perspective, sure, there was, at the end of 2017, this sort of fever around specifically, obviously blockchain in general, but sure, specifically cryptocurrencies.
Sure.
And I suppose to my eyes, that seems to have died away a little bit, but obviously blockchain has not gone away. How do you think things have changed since late 2017? How have businesses' relationship with it changed? What's your impression of it?
So my impression is that Bitcoin will always be feverish when there's the potential for money to be made, right? So there was a big spike in the price of Bitcoin in 2017. We're starting to see that a little bit again. So I think we'll only see more hype from a Bitcoin price value kind of a context. So separating kind of Bitcoin and blockchain, so blockchain is very much the underlying technology of Bitcoin. It's the set of rails which allows that decentralized payments. And in some ways a byproduct of what Satoshi Nakamoto wrote the white paper on in 2009. I don't know if he or they had the foresight to see the power of the underlying technology when they were crafting that white paper about decentralized payments. So blockchain, I think, has a very big future to disrupt. It's a very disruptive technology. So Bitcoin is about disrupting payments and decentralizing payments, whereas you got things like Ethereum, which are about decentralizing everything. So taking things like voting or like Kickstarter type situations where you've got a number of contributors and you need some logic to say whether or not everybody gets paid or not. You know, that's the kind of functionality that Ethereum offers. It's kind of like the App Store on kind of Apple, right? So Ethereum allows you to build dApps or distributed apps where you can apply custom logic using the Solidity language to do whatever it is that you want, whether that's a voting system, a fair voting system written in a smart contract that allows that to work, or something with track and trace for a provenance type situation. It allows that disruption of centralized systems, but not just focusing on money, but focusing on potentially anything.
And that's an interesting point. You bring up the idea of voting, and say for someone who sure, isn't familiar with this technology and isn't familiar with the capabilities of it, for example, in an election, what sort of impact can blockchain technologies such as Ethereum have?
Sure. So one of the benefits of blockchain and what was kind of designed by Satoshi Nakamoto with the Nakamoto blockchain was trust in an untrusted environment. So I could pay you in a completely untrusted way, but guarantee that you get the money. So that's a very powerful mechanism that was proposed there. There was several proposed before, but that was the first one that worked and scaled and to this day remains unbroken, right? So this is the proof of work mechanism or consensus mechanism that was proposed, right? So this was originally designed as a deterrent to spam email, which was applied to payments and to blockchain. So it's a way of ensuring that people don't abuse the system. So you can only do something if you're prepared to invest a certain amount of computing power to ensure that it works. So in the context of voting, you could have a blockchain, a public blockchain, which anybody can read, and could be trusted with such a similar type consensus mechanism. So you can't have bad actors who are not willing to invest a lot of effort, almost an intractable amount of effort, to manipulate the system. So, and having it public as well, anybody can query it, anybody can see it. Whereas at the moment, it's, you know, current voting mechanisms are very archaic with, you know, handwritten pieces of paper that all have to be manually sorted and counted. But instead, we could have a publicly accessible blockchain, which anybody in theory could write an application to verify themselves.
Great. And we caught up about this a little bit before sitting down in terms of your own background, but sure. I suppose specifically what prompted you to step into the blockchain space within MasterCard?
The technology side of things, the number of potential use cases for an underlying blockchain is fascinating. And, you know, within MasterCard, we've built our own. So there are a number of blockchains out there at the moment. You've got Bitcoin and Ethereum and numerous others that all work in different ways. You got Ripple and you got Stellar, and they all do different things in different ways. But it was the opportunity to join MasterCard and work on a blockchain from the ground up. So a fascinating experience, working with some incredibly talented developers, with vision and foresight to build such a mechanism.
Okay. And obviously there's probably a limit to what you can talk about in this space in particular, but can
sure.
you talk us through a little bit about the work MasterCard is doing specifically within the blockchain space?
Sure. So who better to disrupt MasterCard but to disrupt ourselves, right? And that's what labs and R&D is about. So, you know, we take signals of how the market or how the environment could go, and we translate those into ways that could potentially be commercialized. So having invested in building this underlying core blockchain network, we're looking at several use cases of how that could be applied, you know, from a payments perspective, from, you know, a supply chain perspective, from a number of different perspectives, you know, national digital currencies, this kind of stuff. There's hundreds of use cases of blockchain. It's about looking at what could work, what makes sense for kind of MasterCard. So MasterCard's background is, you know, essentially building a set of payment rails, right? That's core MasterCard. Now, MasterCard's obviously a lot bigger than just a core set of payment rails, but, you know, within the core division of MasterCard, it is all about that authorization network, right? So MasterCard does have that, that, you know, strong background of building sets of rails, and that's what blockchain essentially could be in the context of payments. So it's very relevant technology for MasterCard, with a lot of opportunities. And we're starting to see some of those in the market as well, with, you know, with things like Stellar for payments, and, you know, Quorum, which is JP Morgan Chase's flavor of Ethereum, again designed for payments. So it's not a new concept to the market.
And for me, at the risk of having you repeat yourself, for me as an end user, cards, online payments, that where are we likely to see the benefits of that, or where is that impact felt?
From a payments point of view, maybe somewhere like a cross-border type of payment. So, if I want to pay somebody in, say, Latin America today, there's a lot of, you know, intermediaries in that process, and it's very, you know, very inefficient in a lot of ways. So that's definitely one use case from a payments perspective that makes a lot of sense, right? So instead of, going to the bank and waiting for the banks to connect through Nostro and Vostro accounts, and, you know, following that long drawn out process for that payment, which could take several days, you could have a payment which is affected in a matter of minutes.
Okay. And I suppose at a broader level, when we talk about the payment side, you talk about the voting side, where else do you see, what other areas do you see blockchain having an impact on and really shaping?
Yeah, so, you know, with the fluctuations in digital currency instruments like Ethereum and Bitcoin, there's a natural transition to something which is pegged against a fiat currency, you know, an actual currency, something like the US dollar or the euro. So you see this with like the Gemini dollar, which was approved by the US DDT, I think, who are the payments group in New York, as probably the world's first kind of approved stablecoin, where it's pegged against a specific currency and it controls the flow of currency in the market to ensure that it stays pegged, kind of thing, right? So if you could buy one Bitcoin now, it could be worth more or less in an hour's time, But if you buy one Gemini dollar, it's still going to be worth the equivalent in US dollars, no matter when. So that's kind of an intermediary step, potentially towards something like national digital currencies, which I would say most, if not all, countries, sovereign nations are looking at from the perspective of cash moving to a digital form more and more, right? So we see this with like Sweden, who are very progressive, where cash is starting to be removed from the system altogether, and they're moving very much embracing digital payments. So their move towards like an e-kroner national digital currency, where the central bank still has a hand in the flow of sovereign currencies within its borders, but digital currency instead of paper currency.
That's a fascinating idea. I suppose, what sort of challenges then do you face in that sort of situation?
Well, from that kind of situation, there's definitely a lot of pilot work that would need to be done before something could take on a national kind of a context. So, you know, I would suspect you would want to see many years of a closed pilot, you know, tested, verified, before you would start to see a country investing significantly in a digital form of payment and essentially backing that. As they do now, you know, the central bank backs the piece of paper you have in your pocket. Would they back a digital currency in the future? That's maybe not a technology problem, maybe that's a culture problem, you know, but that's definitely one obstacle that would have to be, you know, how comfortable would everybody in a nation be moving to digital payments? You know, there's so many maybe previous generations who like to tuck their money in their mattress kind of thing. So there's definitely some mindset changes there before you could probably see a full nation going completely digital.
And as somebody who works in the industry, do you see that mindset beginning to change, or is there still a lot of opposition to it?
I would say yes. You know, I think as technology evolves, people are getting far more comfortable with, you know, the Internet of Things and ubiquitous technology and ubiquitous payments. I think that's only going to extend. You know, you would probably see a dual payments mechanism in place probably indefinitely. There will be some cases where digital payments just won't make sense potentially. So you would keep a certain amount of cash, sovereign cash, at work within the borders of the country. So you may have a dual system indefinitely. But yeah, I think, you know, technology is evolving at such a pace where everybody is exposed to it in some form or another, whether that be Revolut on your phone or whether that be, you know, tap payments with your credit card, you know, which are becoming far more ubiquitous. I think it's only going to accelerate in times to come.
And I suppose one of the areas of this whole field, which obviously has the biggest impact on us, is you're building up a skill set. And I imagine you're building up the teams in MasterCard in
Absolutely.
An area that, you know, is Dublin is, it's a difficult market to find people in, period, at the
For
moment
sure.
in the technology
For
space.
Sure.
You're doing it within a very new set of technologies. How are you finding that?
A challenge. So I would put less reliance on people who are blockchain experts than people who have the capability to pick it up quite quickly. So having built a blockchain, it doesn't matter how familiar you are with Ethereum, Solidity, Bitcoin. If you understand the concepts, you will pick it up, type of a thing. So blockchain is based on a number of kind of core components which have been around a while. So, you know, cryptography, having an exposure to cryptography, a practical exposure to public key infrastructure, public-private key relationships, transport layer security, common things that you would kind of be exposed to from a development perspective definitely help. Passion to learn, an openness to embrace change. So we may look at one particular use case of blockchain and then it's not working out, we're going to drop that and move to something else. So that kind of a dynamic willingness to learn, proactive kind of hunger to grow, I would be more interested in than someone who's an expert in all things blockchain, type of thing. So it's, I think they're more built than bought, I would see from my current experience trying to build out a number of teams and expand what we've got. I've had more luck building solid blockchain developers than kind of importing them, given that it's such a small niche market.
And do you see any sort of technological background or, you know, industry background as being particularly relevant for when people, I'd say for people who are interested in stepping into this space, what other skill sets lend themselves well to this?
Definitely some experience in distributed systems. So a hands-on experience with a solid object-oriented language, experience with distributed systems, not just in the finance area, but I would say telecom space, anywhere that you've got a number of systems that all have to be communicating regularly and agreeing to how to move forward, which is essentially what a blockchain is. So cryptography, distributed systems, hunger to learn, passion to learn, interest in blockchain. They're the kind of the core components that I would kind of look for. And a solid communicator.
Always, yeah.
It's always a good thing to get a good communicator. Someone who's going to put their hand up and say, I don't get this. We need a workshop on it, kind of thing. Because, you know, so much of this, like coming into to blockchain, having a kind of classically trained computer science background, I kind of picked up the core concepts relatively quickly, but a lot of the nuance of the devil is in the detail with this stuff. And, you know, I've spent more time pulling on the team, getting me up to speed than I would have liked. But, someone who's going to say, look, I don't know what I'm doing here. Let's have a little workshop so that I can get on the same page with everybody else and we're all moving in the same direction. Communication is absolutely key. Probably the highest priority quality from an individual that I'm kind of looking to bring on board.
And I imagine that sort of collaborative culture can make it more interesting to people stepping into it as well, that opportunity to learn.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's not about bringing in everybody at a blockchain expert level. It's about bringing them in with a willingness to learn and then developing them so that they're efficient and kind of high-performing blockchain developers, which can take a number of months, several months, I would say, before they're comfortably able to kind of jump in and confidently make changes. It doesn't happen overnight, and the expectation is that you're not able to do it overnight.
Well, I suppose one last question I'd have for you then, and it's something we've touched on, I suppose, a couple of times, but on a general scale,
sure,
if you're looking 5-10 years down the line, what do you see as being the potential here, and where do you see this as going next?
I see there's a lot of different directions. So, like for instance, on the Azure marketplace, there's 53 blockchains available to build your own instance of, right? So it's definitely something that has a lot of potential, not just in, say, voting use cases, but healthcare use cases, provenance around, you know, medication and drugs and tampering. Verifying the authenticity of a good is a huge industry. Track and trace, public blockchain, where, you know, you're shipping parcels and you're making entries on a chain that can be queried from anywhere. There's an indefinite number of use cases for blockchain in the market. You know, there's interesting areas like national digital currency. You know, over time, that may become more pronounced if whatever country feels they're ready to take the lead there. Maybe it's somewhere very progressive like Sweden, or maybe it's a smaller nation state willing to take it on board. So I think there's a lot of interesting areas that we'll see blockchain in the future. I'm sure we'll see more in the area of payments. But it's still very bleeding edge technology. There's changes coming to the underlying core components of how trust is managed within a blockchain that are still evolving, still coming out as white papers, yet to be defined and yet to be battle hardened yet. It's still a very bleeding edge technology.
Okay.
With a bright future.
Okay. Well, Lauren, thank you very much for coming in and joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.